Welcome to Eat, Capture, Share, the podcast for food bloggers, food lovers, and everyone in between. My name is Kimberly. I'm your host. Episode 45. Welcome back, everybody, to the Eat, Capture, Share podcast. My name is Kimberly Espinel. I'm the food photographer and food blogger behind The Little Plantation, the podcaster here at Eat, Capture, Share. And as always, always super, super grateful that you're tuning in for another episode. We're halfway through season 4, and today I'm bringing you an Instagram mentoring session. Now, if you've tuned in before, you know exactly what awaits you. But if you're new here, let me explain. So an Instagram mentoring session is when I sit down with a creative and or a food lover just like you to talk through either their Instagram strategy, their marketing strategy, their business vision, or just helping them think through the next steps in their business. Be it that they want to be a recipe developer and earn an income that way, be it that they want to turn their side hustle into their main business, or sometimes, like I am doing today, it's as much about thinking through strategic action steps as it is about changing your mindset. Now, before I tell you more and share this podcast episode with you, I wanted to tell you about my masterclass, which is launching this week and taking place on May 30th, 2020. As I record this podcast episode, there are still a handful of spots left. Most of the spots have gone, but there are still a few left, and I would love for you to join. In the masterclass, we'll be looking at how to grow your Instagram, how to think about captions, images, hashtags, and really maximize your presence and time on the platform to grow an online audience and, perhaps most importantly, especially in the time we find ourselves in, obtaining an income source online. I would invite you to listen to today's podcast episode, and if my way of working resonates with you, if some of the things that I touch on today are things that you want to delve deeper in, then definitely get in touch. You can email me at kimberly@thelittleplantation.co.uk or head to the show notes, follow the link to the masterclass, read through the details, and then there's a sign-up sheet where you can get in touch and we'll send out more details and a sign-up form and all the things you'd ever want to know at this stage about the masterclass. I'd love to hear from you. Right, so let me tell you who I am speaking to today. Today, I'm working with Moy Lovell from Trinidad and Tobago. Moy is a gluten-free baker and is just starting to build her business, her side hustle, into something more substantial. But as we talk through where she's at, what's really come to light is that it's definitely not her baking skills that are lacking, but that there's something with Moy's mindset and her fear, perhaps, about taking space and showing the world what she's capable of. And we really delve a little bit deeper into that, as well as very practical marketing strategies that you can apply to your business, be it that you do recipe development, food photography, all sorts. You don't need to have a baking business for the lessons and the strategies and the ideas that we explore in depth today to work. I'm going to leave it at that and hope that you enjoy today's mentoring session. And before I go, I'd really, really encourage you to stay till the very end. So at the end of the mentoring session, I'll be back in your earbuds with a couple of bits and pieces, and definitely encourage you to stay until then. But for now, grab a cup of tea, a cookie, whatever it is that you need to relax and enjoy this episode with Moy. Moy, thank you very much for agreeing to share your business details and the ins and outs here on the podcast. But I really would love to start with you telling me a little bit about your business, what exactly you do, how long you've been running it, and any other details that you think might be helpful for me to know so I can give you the right kind of advice.
Sure. So I have a gluten-free baking, I would say primarily baking business. Mm-hmm. And that's because I can't have gluten at all. It's a medical issue and I can't have it. So when I started, I've been accustomed to just having a whole lot of things that I could eat. My family, they're big cooks and food is really important. So it was very difficult to make a transition from being able to eat everything to eating just about nothing. Very restrictive. Mm-hmm. And it just was not satisfying enough to be at that place where all of the things I grew up with, I was no longer able to enjoy it. So I started to sort myself out, try to learn how to make things that I enjoyed. And over time, my friends or family or whoever, they would have some of what they made. And based on that, they'd be like, wow, this is great. Some of them did not realize that it was, in fact, gluten-free at the time, which was a really nice feeling to know that I could have done that. And from there, what happened is a lot of people started asking, can you make this for me? Can you make that for me? And somewhere inside of that, without any, I would say, real kind of idea at the time, I did not have like, you know, I'm going to start a business. It just happened. And it just went from one or two persons asking to a few other people asking. So that has been about, I would say, about 5 years in the making. So where I am now, having realized that it's going to be difficult for me to be able to just follow something on the internet, I decided to write my own recipes to try and convert from what I was accustomed to eating to what I wanted to eat. And inside of that, too, I also realized that a lot of people wanted recipes. A lot of people started to ask for recipes. So at some point I decided, okay, I'm going to share some of the recipes and tips and tricks. I even tried holding a few classes so that people can understand how to bake. So where I am now, I have a steady, more or less steady flow of people who want me to make things for them. There's always someone who wants a recipe. And in addition to that, I have been trying to put together some dry mixes, flour blends, so that they can make the things that they've been requesting instead of having to come to me to get it done, because I really can't service everyone. So that's where I am now. I bake, I write recipes, I convert them, and I will every now and again sell a flour blend for those who are brave enough to try to make it on their own.
And is this a side hustle? Is this your full-time job? What kind of role does it play? Is this hobby? Where are you at in that front?
Well, I actually work, well, my other job, I do that on my own time as well. My full-time job is really, I do interior design. And that's my, I don't want to say full-time because I work for myself, but that really is the job that pays the bills. But I do have the gluten-free baking business. I can't say that it's a side hustle, because there are not many people who know what I do for a living, to be quite honest. They simply think that this is what I do. So it's in the forefront, it's prominent, but it's not the only thing I can do. And it's really just about the simple economics of it. To bake and be able to pay yourself, you're going to have to do a lot of baking.
A lot. And is that something that you want to do? Or, you know, do you want to grow this business? Or, like, what are your ambitions for it?
I want to grow it. I enjoy doing recipe conversion a lot. It's a task. It's something that's difficult. And I like challenges and I like to work things out. I also like to see people happy. And I just remember that position of not being able to enjoy things and how down and how confusing it was and how difficult it was to try and decipher words and all the ingredients and what does this mean. And so now that I have a very good grasp on it, I like to share that in some form or manner to someone. It's just absolutely rewarding to see somebody feel happy because they haven't had cake in 6 years or something, and now they're able to do it. So,
And can I ask, when you say you'd like to grow the business, What elements? So are you, you know, are you hoping to sell more baked goods? Are you wanting to grow your dry mix business? Are you wanting to monetize your recipe development? Like which element, or perhaps all of those, like which element is it that you really would love to see grow in the next couple of months?
Right. So where it impacts me directly, I would, one, like to make more dry mixes. That's in conjunction with doing all the recipe conversion so that people can have the option. I don't think, unless I open some kind of cafe type situation, that baking is going to be able to, you know, I would be able to do that on a large enough scale. Mm-hmm. So really it's about my mixes and yes, monetizing the recipes, because, you know, what happens with the recipe giving, as in every other place or situation, if you share a recipe, you don't necessarily, you lose some of the rights to it, because it's not as though everyone is going to take your recipe and just do it at home. They may take your recipe and then start their own business to do something using your recipe. And that's a real fear, but it's not the kind of fear that I want to stay in my way. So if I can find a way to at least feel that my work meant something, the two ways I'd like to grow would be somehow to monetize the recipes and to get the mixes or packets or whatever it is out there so people can have it.
Okay, so let's break this down. So the very first thing you'd like to do is to grow your dry mix business.
Yeah.
And can I ask, what are you doing now to grow it? What are you doing in terms of marketing? Like what are you doing? What have you done to get the word out there that this is on offer?
Well, I started with one product, just reaching out to some of the, what would I say, those are dedicated stores for healthy type eating kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to them and they were carrying it. But to be very honest, I literally pulled back a bit, because I realized it's more than just having the mix. You have to, well, I do have a barcode, let's say, for one of the products, but it's just more than that. People will ask questions about your nutritional profile. They want to know information about, you know, how long is this going to last? Which is a simple thing. It's just an expiry date. But to send out a product that can compete with other products, you have to have everything in place. And I did not have everything in place. I do have the packaging. I have the mix. I have the formula. But everything else, I realized I needed to get up to speed with. So I just pulled back. You can order it. You just have to come to me directly. I'm just no longer distributing it, because I haven't worked out how to do that in the best way.
Okay, so what you're saying is that, just so I can be sure that I understand correctly, so you had the dry mixes in whatever health food stores, they stocked it for you, but all the kind of finer details you weren't able to provide, so you've taken that back. And so apart from having it in health food stores, how else are you marketing it? How else are you getting it to customers?
I'm not, actually. I simply have, it's on my, there's a list that I have on my blog or website with the products that I am willing to sell, because I can't sell every recipe or everything I do a recipe for. That's impossible. Mm-hmm. It's just one or two products. So I have that list. And on that list would be that, let's say the one, we're starting with the one product that's already packaged and so on. I have that one on it. So when you get that list, some people will see it and order it. Every now and then I might do a post, either Instagram, Facebook, and from there again people will be reminded that it's there. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I'm not doing anything else.
Okay. And so how often are you posting on Instagram or Facebook reminding people of the dry mix that it's for sale? Like Absolutely. In a month. Like how often would you remind them of that in a month?
This will sound terrible, but it's absolutely inconsistent. It's just, I don't know, I just do it whenever I feel like it. There's no set date, set time, no set strategy.
But do you feel like it usually like 10 times a week or maybe once every 3 months, like approximately?
Maybe once every 2 months or so.
Okay.
There are customers who have used it before, because it was in some of those specialty stores. They don't need a reminder. They just want it. Once they can, they're going to just message me to order it.
Okay. So and I is have that all, feedback. Is that all the customers that have bought it, they all come back and order it again? Or like a select few?
I think it's a few. I can't say that it's all because in the health stores, I did not really get information, let's say, for who was buying it. I just know that it was being purchased. But out of that group, there are people who will contact me directly and say, you know, I would like to get this product. I used to use it at some point.
Okay. So a couple of things, like I think we can have the most amazing product on the planet, but if we don't let people know about it, then it can't come to life. And so marketing, mentioning your product, however you want to, you know, call it, is a really, really key and fundamental part of any business. And so if you post on Instagram, for argument's sake, and say, oh, by the way, I sell these dry mixes, if you do that once every 2 months, that's, you know, the likelihood of me seeing that, unless I'm on your feed all the time, unless the algorithm play to your advantage, unless I'm constantly reading your entire caption, it's very, very possible that I'm going to miss that. So I would really, really urge you to do it a little bit more often than that. And maybe, you know, because I know for myself, like marketing isn't the thing I love the most. I love creating. I love cooking. I love shooting. And marketing is just one of those things I have to do. But if I had a choice not to market, I never would market, even though I fully believe in all the things that I sell because I put my heart and soul into it. But if I were given half a chance, I would never market. The thing
I
is,
get that.
I'm sure you do, because if you're only marketing once every 2 months, that's a really good indication to me that it's not the most, you know, the thing that you love the most. But the truth is that marketing is really the lifeline of any business. And so you just have to remember, if you do it once every 2 months, I'm just going to use that as an approximate. So that's 6 times a year. With Instagram algorithms and Facebook algorithms, even if I'm glued to your feed, I'm probably only seeing one or two of those in the whole entire year. And so I'm not suggesting that you market every single day, but I would say select maybe one every 10 posts. That's what I often recommend my clients do, that once every 10 posts or so, you say, hey, by the way, remember I've got this, it's on sale, or, you know, if you order today, I'll throw in a loaf of banana bread too, or whatever it is, right? Like once every 10. I think that's really the bare bone minimum for a business to really be able to thrive and survive is, you know, we need to get into a nice sort of rhythm. So that would be my first thing, is just to create a little grid for yourself. And, you know, every post that you do, you tick it off. And when you get to number 10, boom, then you know that's your push. That's your reminder to market this product that you put so much love and thought into. That's number one. Number two, the best customers that we have are people who have already bought from us, people who already know how good our products are. And so if you have people that have bought from you before, even the ones that haven't come back for a second batch, it doesn't mean they didn't like it. It might mean that their child fell off the scooter and broke their arm, and now they're in hospital and didn't remember, and then they forgot, and then they lost your card, and you know what it's like. So what I always
do, too far away for them to stop by,
or or they just forgot, or life is what it is, right? So what I would suggest is every time someone buys from you, you take their phone number and or email address and say, oh, would you be happy to be informed about promotions, this, that, and the other. If they say no, fair enough. If they say yes, then you hold on to their email, and once a month, again, bare bone minimum, once a month, you send out a newsletter and say, I've got a new dry mix on the shelves. This is for, gluten-free cornbread. Because those little things, and religiously on the 5th of every month or the 10th of every month or whatever the case may be, you send that out. And I will promise you, you will see more orders through that because people need little reminders.
Yes.
And also, I think, you know, I always believe that we need to treat people who have bought from us with extra care and attention. So if they have bought from you already, maybe offer them 10% off if they buy three or more, or, you know, little extra things that you would never post on your website, but that only they can get because they've bought from you and they're on your list and you're in close communication with them. So I think those are really maybe a first starting point for you to kind of get the message out. How does that sound?
I think that sounds fair enough. I mean, at the end of the day, I think I know that. I have that feeling. Yeah. And I simply just let everything else get in the way so that it does not happen. But it's absolutely a sensible approach. And to be quite honest, anyone who has ever bought for me, anyone, I really appreciate them because it's putting yourself out to test something or to taste something that would be, for many of them, like their first experience. And I really do appreciate my customers. I really appreciate their support. You know, I appreciate their feedback and the drive to keep me going. So it is fair to treat them a certain way.
But I think even if, and I'm sure you communicate that when you speak to them face-to-face or on the phone, but that once a month reminder where you send something out or a refer a friend 10% off discount or 50% or I don't know what you want to do, all the little extras, that's really your way of showing it continuously. And, you know, as a customer, I love feeling special. I love getting a little note to say you can get a free loaf of banana bread if you refer by the, you know, end of this month. Oh my God, I'll refer to like 10 people, you know? So it's always those little, I think those little attention to detail, those little reminders, those little things that will really communicate to your audience or your clients how much you appreciate them. So I think having that a strict thing where you say once a month, once every 10 posts, then you can't wriggle yourself around it because I have been following you for a long time. I have never, ever read one. And this could be Instagram algorithm. This could be because I'm not on Instagram every day, every moment. But I have, if I didn't know that you run a business, I wouldn't know. Like there's nothing. Yeah. I've never, ever. And then the other thing, there's actually two accounts I would really advise you, well, one of them to follow for sure. It's Tastopia. I'll put it in the show notes. I'll send it to you as well. But she's a former student of mine and she runs a vegan baking business. And one of the things I know is that she's doing no contact home deliveries during this quarantine period because she's mentioned it a couple of times. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cute. You know, this is so wonderful. She's delivering birthday cakes and, you know, donuts and all the things for all the celebrations that people are having to hold in quarantine. And, you know, I don't know if you're doing deliveries in this quarantine period. I don't know if you're doing no contact pickups, like all these really important details that we need. I don't know. And I checked your website and I couldn't see any information about that either. So now that we find ourselves in this place, that was really crucial information for you to put out there. And just quickly, oh, remember, I do no contact or you can pick up. It's not, you know, I wear gloves, I wear face mask. I don't know what it is, how you're maneuvering this. But that would be really, really important.
Yes, it is.
You're smiling.
Only simple things that you should really know just by your common sense. But, you know, you just get everything else, as I said, in the way.
I mean, that's what you have this session for, right? Like it's the other account, and I'm going to put this in an email and in the show notes. I think she sells grains and buckwheats and all the things. And what she does is she regularly mentions it in her mm-hmm. captions. Oh, today only 20% off. But the other thing she does, which I think is really, really clever, the recipes that she shares on her Instagram contain the products that she sells. So she'll make, I don't know, like she does a lot of bowls. She'll make something super delicious. She said, by the way, I used my buckwheat mix and today only it's 10% off if you buy two or more. And then she, you know, she shares the recipe of whatever it is that she's made as well.
Right.
So it gives you more of a context of how things can be used. And I often think if you're really good in the kitchen, if you know you're baking, you're all the things, then you think everybody does, but a lot of people, here it is, Shira McDermott. So I will send you the link to her, but she has a business and the florist, that's the name of the business that she's got. So they sell a milled grain and dry goods. So exactly what you do. But every single recipe that she shares pretty much without fail, it includes her products. So she's constantly showing them off. And it gives you as an audience member a real context of how these things can be used. Like it brings them to life. And so every time you don't have to use them every single Instagram post, but every time you use them, just say, by the way, I use this and this mix. By the way, you can make this at home. So it gives people a real context.
I like that idea a lot, actually, because it's very difficult. Sometimes I share a recipe and depending on what the recipe contains, people can't find the product or, you know, it just doesn't work for them. And it would be, I think that's an extremely good idea. Even the most basic recipe, which would be, let's say, a bread or muffin, at least let them have a mix so that they can follow the recipe with what you did the recipe with in the first place.
So I would love for you to follow Florist and the other account that I said, because the other thing I'm useless when it comes to bread baking. Like that is just not my thing. And so what she does is she really shows what the bread should look like, the texture, a couple of how to in her Instagram feed, so you can get a sense of how long you need to knead the bread and, you know, all those finer details are especially important with gluten-free baking. You know, that's going to be so helpful for your audience. Yeah.
Agreed. Because the other thing I realized, not just the product makes the difference. I generally do gluten-free vegan baking. It is absolutely finicky, miserable. So if you've never done it before and you just read through a recipe, chances are it's not going to turn out 100% okay the very first time you try. Because in addition to the recipe, it's just a process. Something that you have to understand. You need to know what it looks like. So fair enough on that idea.
Yeah.
It would be great to show them how to do it so they don't, the recipe does not fail.
Yes. Now, my other question, and you very kindly completed a form and you also kind of mentioned that you'd love to monetize your recipe development. And so I was kind of wondering, how in an ideal world, what would that look like for you? I think you mentioned something in your form about working with brands. Can you tell me a little bit more about your vision for that?
Well, the first thing maybe is just to find a way to share some of the recipes without giving it away. That's basically it. Mm-hmm. So if it's a cookbook, I've explored that possibility. It's quite expensive. But there's that option. There has to be another way as well outside of that. Mm-hmm. It's just so that when you share the recipe, you know for sure that, you know, it's not going to take away from anything that you're doing. Because as I said, the little fear is sometimes that you share a recipe and then someone else is just going to take that recipe and make their business grow while you know, you're stuck. I mean, it's a very strange thing to try and explain, but that's basically it. Mm-hmm. So perhaps it can either be a cookbook or some other way. And then also when it comes to brands, you know, sometimes I would go on a brand's website and they're advertising this or that. And I don't think that they know how to use some of the products that they're selling. Mm-hmm. That should be part and parcel of the offer. But to be quite honest, I think, you know, it's easy to be, let's say, someone who grows rice but you're not necessarily going to know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. So with brands, sometimes I look at the page and I'm like, oh my God, that could be so much better. That thing could be so much better. That product, that recipe could be so much better if they just, let me fix it. Because
Can I just unpick this? So just so I, again, sure. So I understand. So you're saying that you're reluctant to give away certain recipes because somebody might take it and then, you know, run with it and open their own business type of thing. But then my question is, if you put that recipe in a cookbook, they could buy that cookbook and do the same thing, right?
Yes. It's strange to, when you say it out loud, sometimes it sounds nonsensical. But the thing is, if, let's say, someone bought your cookbook, mm-hmm. at least you know that the work and the time that you put into developing the recipe has some kind of value. If they steal it, and steal again, that's still so very strong. If they use it in their own business, at least they would have compensated you somewhat, I suppose, for the fact that you did all that work, because it takes quite a lot of time and money, you know, to be able to develop recipes, because you're buying a whole host of products. And I really want to share them. I really do. There's that little fear, I guess, if, I don't know, it just probably comes from the little noise around me, but there's just that little fear that, you know, you give it away and it's not appreciated and you will not ever be able to see returns, I suppose, on the amount of work you do.
I'm
that's
not
okay
sure.
To have a different viewpoint, because
yeah,
that helps
sure.
me. That
yeah.
helps me.
I'm not, you know, I like, I know, because my dad way back when used to work in a restaurant, and they had, it was like an Italian restaurant, and they had this, you know, secret tomato sauce recipe that, you know, was like the bomb.
Yeah.
And remember, like, he wasn't even allowed in the kitchen when they put that together, and, you know, everybody flocked to this restaurant just to try that tomato sauce because whatever. And so I think if you have a recipe that is completely yours, that you feel so protective of, that is, you know, that defines you as a baker, what you do, don't ever give that away, not in a cookbook, not anything. But I think once you put something out into the world, it is, you do that wholeheartedly and without expecting anything in return, and you let that go. So for example, if you have dry mixes that you have really put together with so much care and love and attention and focus, and that is the foundation of your business, then you'd be silly to give the flour mix recipe away, because that is your business and that's the secret sauce that you have, and you hold on to that. And so that I would never put in any sort of cookbook, or, you know, that is your business. But I think anything else, you give and you give with an open heart. And if you cannot give it with an open heart, then you keep it for yourself. You know what I mean? And so I would never give away, if I had your business, I wouldn't give away how I make the dry mixes. Like, that is sacred and that stays with you, and nobody can ever, and they'll, you know, when that goes with you to your grave, unless, you know, you pass it on to your children or whoever, right? But everything else you give with an open heart, because I always think it comes back tenfold that way. The second thing is, I think there's a flaw in your thinking about the cookbook being compensation in any way. Yes. Like, I think cookbooks, again, you create for love, for the joy and for the passion. And yes. as a marketing tool for the business that you have, rather than as a money-making entity in and of itself. Because, you know, cookbooks, unless you're Jamie Oliver or Nigella Lawson, or you are always the money investments rather than yes. anything that, you know, just think about the testing and retesting, all the ingredients you need to use, gas, water, electricity to, you know, use the oven, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, it's always an investment. And the way that it comes back to you is that it links back to the dry mixes that you're selling, or, yes. you know, the banana breads that you're selling, or whatever it is. So it's really looking at it not as a moneymaker, but as a marketing tool. So that would be, that is how, and stop me if something doesn't make sense. So I just wonder if a slightly different way of looking at it, will free you. But the other thing is, in terms of brands, if you feel that you could do so much better, which I'm sure you can because you're passionate about it, this is what you know, and you're a pro at this, is, you know, my next question would be, have you reached out to these brands and suggested a collaboration?
Well, I'm going to just say that, sorry. So what you said before in terms of sharing recipes and so on, to be quite honest, I agree with that. It's just maybe, as I said, there's a lot of noise around me, and sometimes it's difficult to navigate. Again, it's no one's fault, because at the end of the day, you've got to make the decision that's best for you, mm-hmm. and that's right with your conscience. Yes. Perhaps maybe I'm just saying that when I first started, and I was like, okay, I'm going to share this recipe, there'd be resistance that don't, because you're just giving it away. So I agree with you, but because of that, I'm going to call it advice, because I can't find another word, that advice, it has also just, I've allowed it to confuse me. So when I think about brands as well, I have no idea what to do, because it, at the same time, if I offer to help them, am I going to offer to help them for free? I'm sure that that's not necessarily the suggestion, but then what is it worth? What is your help worth? Why? And I've just been so confused between what I think I want and what maybe some of the advice I've been given. Again, nobody's at fault. This is just information that you process in your brain, and you have to try and make sense of it. And because I haven't been able to really figure out how to, or what is really the best way between my heart and my head to approach it, I haven't really contacted anyone. Mm-hmm. No brand, none, nobody. But every now and then, there is a company, a local company, that distributes gluten-free products, and I have helped them from time to time to develop recipes and to, let's say, sell their products based on more information on what can be done with it. So I have done that. But beyond that, I really haven't reached out any further.
And was that paid for, or was that, like, how did that transaction work?
The last transaction, I'm going to use that word, the last transaction I did with them, I did the recipes, they reimbursed me with product, which was fine, because the product mm-hmm. is expensive. So yeah, the last set was that. Everything else was just, basically, I just did it because I felt I wanted to.
I mean, I think it's a good experience. And I mean, I have a few ideas around that. I think, because your audience isn't very big, it's going to be hard at this point for you. I mean, it's still worth a try, but it's going to be hard for you to get monetary compensation for mentioning and featuring their products. And then it's about whether you feel that you're underselling yourself for taking product in exchange. And if you do, then I'd say don't do it. But if you feel that it feels right for where you're at and what you offer them and what they offer you, then I would say go for it for as long as it feels right. And then when it doesn't feel right anymore, you can either pull the plug, or you can say, you know, we've been working together now for 6 months. I've, you know, produced all this incredible content, and I was wondering if we can maybe negotiate a different way of working together going forward. And so, you know, I think because your following isn't that big, that's maybe the way to do it, where, you know, you're showing what you're capable of, you're showing loyalty, you're showing commitment. And then once you've done that for 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, until it no longer feels right, until it feels like you're ready to take the next step, then proposing that and see what they come back with, and then taking it from there.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds fair. I think it sounds fair enough. Not just sitting down waiting for what may be the right answer to come along.
I do think it's important to listen to your gut and, you know, accept where you are. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding. If what you're producing is good and they're getting a good response and they're seeing that you're delivering on time and all that you're delivering is high quality, then, you know, making that, you know, higher demands, I think they'll respond to it better than right now without having that consistent experience with you.
Yes.
To say, I'd love you to pay me for this, which they may do. Like, there's nothing saying that you can't do that, but it just gives you a better grounds of negotiation.
Yes. Okay. Sounds good. Yeah.
Now, the other thing is, I think it's lovely that you're working with a local brand, but if you've listened to the podcast and listened to the advice I've given, or at least I think I've given it on the podcast, I think it's really helpful if you do a blog post about, I'm just going to say Bob's Red Mill, for example, because that's the one brand that I really know. Like, say you've done
something. They're the most popular.
Imagine you've done something for them. I would create a blog post around that and say, you know, Bob's Red Mill came to me. They asked me to develop a sourdough loaf using their gluten-free flour. This is what I produced. Da, 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 da. And so as you go and approach other brands or brands approach you, then you can say, by the way, this is what I did before. This is the level of work that you can expect. So people can actually get a better sense of what working with you is like. Because again, going to your website, there is nothing there. If I were a brand, I wouldn't work with, well, it's not that I wouldn't work with you, but it'd be like, you know, who has she worked with? What has she done? And on that note, actually taking a couple of steps back, there's also no testimonials. I don't know if I would spend any money on your dry products because there's not a single testimonial. I wouldn't know that you've sold any ever and that you've had happy customers because there's nothing there to suggest that people have been pleased with the products that they've purchased. So, you know, all those things just mean that you're potentially losing customers both from brands and also from you know, lay people, so to speak, who want to buy your products.
So just to clarify what you said before, say with the brands, you were saying that there should be something there that lets them know, I've done this in particular with this flower from this company. This is what it looks like to work with me. Are we saying then we're setting up perhaps a separate page on the website for something like that?
I mean, I always think it's good to have a work with me page.
Right.
So where you could have that, you could show that. And so I would probably do a work with me page with a drop down. So work with me, you know, for brands. And then you say, this is, and then also work with, you know, buy my dry products. You know, I don't know, Jane bought this product. She was super happy. She made this loaf. She loved it and her testimonial. And then I think you also offer like one-to-one classes that maybe one, you know, another work with me one-to-one, and then maybe one or two photos of what a session would look like. So that people have context and don't have to fill in the blanks. Like, you're spelling it out. You're showing that this is for real. This is a serious business. And this is the high level of service that they can expect.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Great.
I can do that. Yeah, it's, I think as you said it, it in my head went like, well, why haven't you done it? In my head, it's like, what she's saying is just simply sensible. Well, why haven't you done it? So
I have a theory about those things, and this may not apply to you, but I sometimes think that we're a little bit shy about seeming like we're promoting ourselves too much or something, like we're taking up too much space, like we're bragging or something like that. And I think especially as women, we often think that.
Yes.
So we make ourselves a little bit smaller and a little bit less noticeable.
Right.
So that, you
know. And then you feel, maybe I think going with what you said, because I think that the minute you said it, it resonated. So I think that has to be part of the problem. But it's also a little bit of, you know, we still carry around the imposter syndrome kind of thing. If you look at me long and hard enough, you'll know that I'm not this popular person, XYZ name. Instead of, this is just someone who did this and she's pretty good at it. You know, I think part of it is also that it's like putting yourself out there to be judged. You know, it feels like, well, that's what it is. You're stepping into a platform where now everyone can have a feeling and a say about you.
Yeah, but not just that. It also means you know, and I feel this, like every time I market something, it's not that people are going to judge me. Oh, there she goes again, talking about her e-courses. Yes, because it's darn good. But also that people can reject you, you know, because when you put your offer out there, you're out there because your business is just, you know, so full of your heart, and people can say no, thank you. And that hurts, right? So if we don't say it, if we don't put ourselves out there, we're kind of protecting our heart from rejection as well. And so, but what happens, it's almost like you're pulling the oxygen away from your business and not actually letting it, you know, establish roots and grow. And I think that you're a little bit stuck in that cycle.
Yeah.
And actually your kind of fear of people taking things and you know, you're thinking quite small when actually you could think big, you know? Yes.
No, that is absolutely correct, I think. I think that's absolutely correct. You tell yourself, why can't I be like this person who is quite successful? And then when you think about the steps to get there, well, I can't do that, or this does not apply to me. Yeah, absolutely correct. It is a mindset more than a reality, I think. Now that you've mentioned a few things, it's definitely a mindset. It is thinking small, regardless of how that hurts to say, but it is definitely a mindset that is in front of you. A mindset, it could be because of, you know, socioeconomic issues in your life or whatever it is. But yeah, I think it's quite a mindset. Yeah. And then, as I said, that noise, again, I want to be very clear that when I speak about the noise, it's not because I don't appreciate the people in my life or the life experiences I've had or the advice that I'm given, but sometimes that noise just takes over your heart, what your heart feels, because then, you know, it's, and I'm going to say this because I feel that anybody else hearing it will understand what I mean. You tell yourself, okay, I'm going to do this. And then someone says, you are too easy. You don't have enough, whatever it is they think you're supposed to have, some strength, some knowledge, some whatever. You're not good enough to do this. They're never going to say that you're not good enough. But the suggestion is that somehow you're doing it wrong. Really? You're going to share that recipe? What happens if someone takes your recipe? Or whatever it is, that noise gets so loud that you live in a position of self-doubt, and then you're wondering, can I really do this? Maybe do I make bad decisions? Because it, for whatever reason, there's just so, even though you have a lot of support and a lot of people who are happy to support you, there's also everyone else who they're trying to support you, but not necessarily giving you the right information. And to be quite honest, that noise gets really, really loud at times.
I mean, they want to protect you, you know. I'm going to just assume that all the things that they said, that came from a good place.
I agree with that.
Because they don't want you to get hurt, and they don't want you to experience rejection, and they don't want you, you know, to go through pain and upset, and maybe things aren't going to work out. Maybe someone's not going to buy your product. But the thing is, all of those things form part of successful business. There are things, products that don't sell, which is great, because then you know I don't need to put that on the market. And if that one mix sells really well, then you dial down on that. And every rejection is a lesson. Every success is a lesson. And you're passionate about this, and one rejection is not going to stop you from baking another loaf, you know? Yeah. So you can do it.
I can. And I'm going to make one change immediately.
Oh, wonderful. What is that? Because I'd love to end the call with maybe an action that you're going to take this week, this month.
Yeah, this month. So immediately, well, actually, two things I can do immediately. Immediately, I'm going to change my mindset on how I share things. So I'm going to, you know, put aside some of those fears and some of those questions, and just do it, because I actually like doing it.
Yes.
And I have restricted myself because of whatever else is happening emotionally. So immediately I'm going to change that. And then the second thing I'm going to change is I'm going to pay attention to my website/blog. I'll stop calling it a website so that I commit to the idea of sharing by calling it a blog, because I keep saying it's not a blog because I'm not really, you know, chitty chatty, but I'm going to change that as fast as possible so that there is, as you said, some kind of testimonial reason, yes, some story behind what's happening. So those are the two things I'm going to do immediately. Amazing. And the third thing is really I'm going to look at how I can incorporate my product into the recipes. I think that's an absolutely brilliant idea. One or two people have tried the recipes and I keep telling them, well, call me, I'll help you. And I realize the problem is not just about the understanding of the recipe. The problem has to do with the process. And if there's any mm-hmm. way I can help that process by giving the product or any other way, I think that for me is a really good idea and a definitely a place to start for me.
Amazing. Molly, thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing what's going on in your business in this quarantine period. I want to wish you lots of success and I will keep a close eye on your Instagram to follow your progress.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you a lot for giving me that push.
How generous of Moy to share her business so openly and vulnerably here on the podcast. I hope that anything shared and discussed today will help you in some way to grow your business, your online presence, and yeah, really, really hope it was helpful. I'd love if you stop by Moy's Instagram. She's Moy's Gluten-Free Kitchen. I've put a link to her social in the show notes. So yeah, stop by, say hi, tell her that you listened. I know she would so appreciate it. Also, if you enjoyed this podcast, if you know or if you feel that I could help you further on your path and you'd like to join the small group live masterclass on Instagram and blogging, please head to the show notes for more information. Also, if you'd like to work with me one-to-one to really do a deep dive into your social media strategy, your food or online business, get in touch. You can get a hold of me at kimberly@thelittleplantation.co.uk and we can definitely book something in. Alternatively, I am looking for volunteers to have their Instagram mentoring session recorded for the podcast. There is a cost involved, but it is greatly reduced to what would normally be my one-to-one fee. So again, if you have an online business or a food business, or you want to grow your Instagram and show off your baked goods or whatever it is, and you would like to share your story and process on the podcast, please get in touch as well. I'm looking for anyone who would be happy to share the recording of our one-to-one session for season 5. I think that's it. I'll be back, same time, same place next week. Stay safe and I look forward to connecting to you all then. Before I leave you, I wanted to say thank you so, so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I also wanted to let you know that this podcast was brought to you by my free creative community, the Eat, Capture, Share Creative Community on Facebook, formerly known as the Food Photo Insta Creative Community, and I'd love for you to join. I will pop the details on how you can join my creative community in the show notes, so do go and check it out. Also, if you enjoy the podcast, it means so much if you can rate, review, and subscribe. All those things will help the podcast to grow and to reach the right audience. Yeah, you'd kind of make my day. All right, see you soon. Take care.